This is Studio Potter, the podcast.
Please enjoy listening to part two of A Conversation with Sana Musasama. In this episode, Studio Potter partners with Garth Johnson and the Everson Museum of Art to share a conversation between Garth and Sana Musasama. The annual Ceramic Arts Lecture is a co-presentation of Syracuse University College of Visual and Performing Arts, the Everson Museum of Art, and the Chronicles of American Ceramics Foundation. This lecture series has been transcribed and prepared for publication by Studio Potter. The conversation between Garth and Sana was first recorded in conjunction with Sana's solo exhibition at the Everson titled Returning to Ourselves, which was exhibited from February 3rd through April 28th, 2024.
So hearing you talk about this makes me think about your exhibition at the Everson. When one enters the exhibition at the Everson, the first thing that's on display are four pieces from the early 80s, where I love seeing your hands move because it's an analog of your looking and all of the details that you've absorbed and put into your own work, and I can see the textures and the patterns of the pieces that greet us when you come into your exhibition. In particular, in the early 1980s, you're synthesizing all of this travel that you've done, and you start to do a series that you call Houses.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about the houses as a container for the travel and the experiences that you had over this decade plus period?
Yes. In many cultures, I learned that the house has many different references. In the village that I lived in Mendeland, the house was the only place you went really in to sleep and pray. The world was outside of your hut. Even the doorway to the hut was so low that you had to bow to go into it. And there was a house for women, a house for men, a house for children, a house for animals, a house for when you had your cycle, a house when you birthed. They had all these different houses that played different roles. A house where you went for silence, a house where you went if your spouse died or your family for mourning. All these different references for the house that were really fascinating for me, and who were my teachers were little girls because their mothers were so busy in the farms and working, but their daughters became my guides and my teachers and my mommies in other ways, and we would weave through these different houses, and some houses you entered, you had to bow to the doorway before you entered. Some houses you went to, you had to take your shoes off before you entered. Some houses you went to, you had to put water into your mouth and spit it out. There were all these different rituals around the idea of the house. And growing up with five sisters and being around the kitchen table, sometimes I would be fighting with Vicky or fighting with somebody. We were always fussing. There was never enough room. And I was a sloppy kid with crayons, so nobody wanted me in the room with them. I never cleaned up. And so when we would be fighting and fighting, getting on my mother's nerves, and she would say, all right, all right. She taught us that our bodies were our temples and that we were made up of thousands of little bricks. And so when we were acting up, she says, you're missing bricks. And she would say, go to your room and rebuild yourself. So with that, and Mendeland and all these different houses, being alone, being a woman in a gender-defined culture, my guy friend who I was with was the guys all the time. I was always with little girls because their mothers were off. My body became my temple again, and my body became my protection. It was where I retreated to be at home, where things that I saw were difficult. If I saw a little boy, a little girl, get hurt very, very badly and not be sent to the hospital instead buried 4 or 5 days. I retreated to my house to comfort me. If there were a war between two tribes, people hurting each other or robbing each other or people being stolen, I retreated to my house to insulate me. So all of a sudden, that story about you're missing bricks, Sana, I felt that I was missing bricks and I had to constantly keep rebuilding myself. So that's when I started picking up books and I began recording everything that I was experiencing and listening and listening and observing. And my house became monumental in my metaphorical world to myself. And then I told myself, coming home after traveling for 9.5 months and coming home to a mother who was dying and to a father who was very angry that I had left my mother during her sick period. But at the airport when he said, how can you leave your mom and your mom is sick? She wasn't dying at the time. And I said, Daddy, I've got 4 sisters. I've got you. I've got Aunt Dot. I've got Aunt Ruth. Can't you guys cover for me so I can go and have this experience? I want to go find who I am. He said, you are here. I said, yeah, but there's a world out there, Daddy. Just trust me. I'll be back. I'll be safe. He says, but you always running your mouth. You're going to say something someplace and get killed. I said, I'll keep my mouth shut. I promise I'll keep my mouth shut. My mother at that point is blind, legally blind, and she's wailing. Don't go, don't go. And then they tell me, you have too much luggage. You have too much. You can't take this flight. It's too much. I open up my luggage and I start throwing the clothes out across the airport and say, I'm going. And I pack it up. My father throws it. I look at my mom and say, Mom, I promise I'll come home safe. And I got on an airplane and I have 2 girlfriends there. And they say, my God, your family's crazy. I said, don't you dare call my family crazy. He said, look at them. I said, shut up. Don't you call my family crazy. And then I got on that airplane and went, but I lost your thought. What was it? So
houses. And so eventually all of these things become channeled into these towering house forms that are adorned with so many different motifs.
Right. Well, this is what I thought. Came home and I climbed in the bed with my mother and she died 3 months later. And I held her in my arms and we talked. And she talked about the God that she believed in that I no longer believed in because he robbed her of her eyesight. And I listened to her talk and talk and talk. And we talked about the temple stories. And I became deeply, deeply, deeply depressed and introverted and quiet. And we buried her. And I started making houses. And I made them for 10 years. And I started traveling and doing residencies. And everywhere I went, I took the story of the house. And I really felt that in making these houses, I was healing myself, to be honest with you. And I did eventually. The hurt went away. My sisters forgave me. My father forgave me. And 7 years later, my dad died. So
the first thing that we see when we enter your exhibition are a group of these houses from the early 80s. And we've all gone through trauma and change and loss through the COVID pandemic over the last 4 years. You've returned to the houses
That's
and
right.
The exhibition is bookended. The exhibition is called Returning to Ourselves.
Yes.
And it's literally bookended with new house forms, which I think are incredibly powerful and incredibly strong. Can you talk about returning to healing and the house and the juncture that you find yourself in your career at this point?
Yes. During St. Albans, Queens is still pretty much a very small, quiet community. The people who are there that are still from my family's generation, they're in their 90s. And so the pandemic really meant nothing to them because they don't leave the house anyway. Mrs. Wilson, my mother's best friend, she says, I'm in my sitting years. So her sitting years is to get up in the morning, drink her coffee, eat her oatmeal, and go sit in the front part of her house and just look out the window. The same thing with Mrs. Kimbrough. The same thing with Mrs. Archer. They say, we're in our sitting years. They have the paper in front of them, the book, and all day long they sit. And food comes and delivers it. The doctors come and see them. So with that, I couldn't go to them. I would have brought the virus to them. So At that point, I was really isolated. The bus stopped running because not many people live in that particular area who don't have cars. So the bus stopped running, the mail stopped coming. I was in my house, I think, 5.5 months and never saw anyone. I had a meltdown. My nails started coming off. My hair shredded. I had a rash on my neck. I was constantly doing this. I paced from one room to the other. I would pull on my hair until it was in my hand and on the floor. The only way I saw my sisters was on Zoom to see them. And we'd be on Zoom and I'd look at them and they all have children and their children have children and they all came together for the pandemic. I have no children. I have no partner. So it was just me in the house. And so in the living room, I have about 12 of those houses from the 80s that you have upstairs. I sat with them. I just crawled up next to them and sat with them, and I cried without tears. I had no tears. I was so empty inside, and I sat there, and I sat there, and I looked at them, and I looked at them, and I looked at them, and I thought about the world that they gave back to me, and I looked at them, and I looked at them. I'm getting emotional.
Yeah. We both need the tissue.
Yeah. And then one day I just said, are you as lonesome as me? Do you feel as hollow as I feel? And one of them whispered back, Sana, you saved us 40 years. Save yourself. Save yourself. And so I got up and I said, okay, go into the studio, which is in the backyard. But when I went into the studio, I heard the outside world screaming about the George Floyd murder. And I was conflicted between, does the world need me to make sculptures? Or does the world need me to be a civic citizen in March? And I was torn between what to do. Every time I picked up the clay, I said, you can't do this. You can't do this, Sana. So then I put on a double mask and when it marched. And I kept a distance from the big crowds. And when the crowds got too congested, I would stand to the side. But I marched and I marched and I marched for weeks and weeks. Everywhere there was a march, I marched. And then I would come to Jamaica Avenue. There was no buses. And I'd walk 2 hours to my house. And then I'd go into the studio and I could make a little bit of something. And then the next day, I'd go into the studio and say, no. I'd go march again. And then a whisper came that, Sana, the world needs all of you, Sana the artist, Sana the activist. And so I went back to the houses in the living room and I looked at them and said, you're lonesome and I'm lonesome, but I'm going to fix it. I'm going to make a companion for every one of you. And I'm going to return to myself being healed. The houses are particularly special to me because they were made prior to any art school training. None whatsoever. I consider Alfred to be my art school training. All the rest of it is just my wellspring, those macrame. But I said, I'm going to make you a companion. You're never going to be lonesome again. And that's why I returned to this body of work, and I'm making them now. And I'm now maybe 8 weeks from retiring from all of my 6 jobs of 26 years of 6 days a week. Sometimes I was telling Garth that John Jay, my class starts at 7, and it's an hour and a half from home. I'm on the bus at 4:45 in the morning. In the summer, it's dark, and I come home at 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's dark. So that has been my life for 26 years, just working all these jobs, John Jay, community college, this one, even a TA, Philadelphia. I jumped to Philadelphia, teach a 2-hour class, and come back. And so with all of that, I decided that with Alfred last summer, I graduated from Alfred. Adira invited me to go there give a lecture. I went there and saw the place very radically different from when we were there, Peter. I mean, it's unbelievable, all the kilns. And I walked around that place and I said, wow, look at this, look at this. And I thought to myself, I'd love to come back. And so Adira and Will and Walter were talking, and I said, no, I'll just come to summer school. And they made a way for me to come last year as a resident. And so that was where I returned to 7 days a week, 11-hour days of working, and it returned me back to where we were in graduate school all over again. I have never, ever had that experience since graduate school because jobs dominated. So studio practice became 8 intensive weeks out of 365 days a week. I didn't have it because the jobs took over. I have a home. I have nieces and nephews that I have to send to school, buy their clothing, give them experiences. And so Alfred, working there last year and being the age I am and the time I am, I said, Sana, this is where your heart beats the loudest. If you don't do this now, when? You're in your 70s. What will 70, what will 10 years be like now? My mom died in her 50s. My father died in his 60s. I'm beyond their age now. Maybe I won't be around. If you don't stop and make your work now with this kind of intensity, when will you? So after leaving Alfred, I took the 7-hour bus home. Every hour, my happiness sank from me. When I got back to New York, I knew within 2 days it'd be 7 jobs all over again. I went in that living room and sat down with those houses and looked at them. And we talked to each other metaphorically. And I went to work the next 2 weeks and I began quitting every job. And slowly I gave my resignation into every job. Some of them said, Sana, we have nobody to replace you. Can you do the academic year? I said, of course. And so after I did the academic at Hunter, left. After I did the academic at Queens, left. John Jay in 6 weeks. And Jamaica Arts Center, where I teach kids, which is my heartthrob, I'll teach their summer session, and then that's done. And then what I've planned is that because I'm still unable to be in my studio alone, I can't be in there. It has too many echoes from the pandemic. I get in there, I get anxious. I'm going to do residencies. So I applied to 9 residencies. I got into 5.
Great.
I'm going to apply for another 15 after the March when they open up again. I will begin in May, and for the next 5.5 years, I'm going to trek around the world and make the houses in the same places that the other houses were born, and I'm returning to me.
So these are amazing thoughts to keep kind of in our hearts as we walk through Sana's exhibition, and I want to wrap up our conversation with questions by pointing out that, you know, you are at this amazing juncture where you are going to open up your life to travel and residencies, but to also point out that while you were working 7 jobs, you fiercely held space for making time during breaks to go to Cambodia and go to other countries. And I just want to wrap up by returning to this idea that you mentioned about girls being your teacher throughout your career. And you're going to talk more about this tonight. But can you talk about your travel and work in Cambodia, in particular, your activism as a way to wrap up this conversation?
Yeah. Coming home from my job at Hunter was 5 to 9. Teaching in the evening, and then always after class, I sit down and write notes about, because I have so many jobs, I have to remember everything. So I have detailed notes, and I have pictures of all my students, and I write down what they've done, where they, what I need to offer them, what artists I have. By the time that's done, I'm into 11 o'clock at night. So then I'm getting on the train going home, and it's 2 hours to go home. And so I'm sitting on the train at night going home, because the trains run all night long. And next to me on the train is a woman reading Glamour magazine, magazines. I don't ever buy magazines. I couldn't afford them. But on the cover, it says Women of the Year Awards. And so I peek at it and say, oh, awards. And I'm always looking for awards and grants. And so I look over her shoulder and she's turning the pages I'm reading and she does this. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, because I was leaning on her reading. And then I said, oh, I'm sorry. I hate when people do that to me and I'm doing the same thing to you. And she says, never mind, never mind. And so at that point, I'm so embarrassed. I open up my magazine, I read. And then 2 stops later, I hear her say, And I turn around and she hands me the magazine. And so I thank her and I open it up and I read about five women who got this award, five incredible women who are changing the world in radical ways. And one of them was Somali Mom, who grew up as a sex slave. And I read her story and I digested it. It went into my stomach. And when I got home, I vomited over and over again, just pacing, how could this happen? Where in the world does these things happen? And then I got on the computer and found her name, and I found the organization, and I wrote and said, I'm sorry for what happened to your childhood. And then I belched, and I said, okay, Sonny, you're okay, you can go to bed now. And then I went and laid down, and I got up and I spit up again. And I ran to the computer and I wrote and said, what can I do? And she wrote me back in an hour and said, come to Campbell. I said, what can I do? I'm an artist. What can I do? And she wrote me back an hour later and said, come to Cambodia. And so I got another job, saved up the airfare because I did, you know, the jobs I had was paying for what I had. So I got another job, paid up my airfare. That was June, that this article comes out every year. I paid up my airfare, started buying tickets, started getting my inoculations, getting ready. And in December, I traveled to Cambodia to work with them. At the time, I was working in an alternative incarceration center with first-time felons. My population were girls. I took a globe into the classroom the next day. I read her story to them, and I showed them where Cambodia was. And I said, I'm going there to work with these girls. These New York City girls who were real tough became like two-year-olds. They clung to me and sat next to me, and sometimes they'd just as well take me and sling me out a window. They're so angry. And they said, Sana, this happened to them. I said, yes. She said, Sana, but they're not black. I said, I know, sweetheart, injustices happen to brown people, but they happen to other people, and I don't want you to grow up thinking that everything's going to happen bad because you're brown. I know the realities don't shape that, but look at Somali, look at her girls. They're not brown girls. She said, and what are you going to do? How are you going to get there? I said, I'm going to fly. And they said, how much is it going to cost? I said, the airfare is $1,500. They said, where are you going to get $1,500 from? I said, I got an extra job. And I said, you're going to get another job? And I said, yes. They said, but Sana, I can sell cocaine and get $1,500 tonight. I said, yeah, but you're in jail. I don't want to go to jail. And I said, okay, don't diss me. I said, no, but I want to work to get it. And so they said, Sana, I have this idea. We have an art therapist that worked there as well. And I was in the education department with Roy Steele, who graduated from Alfred too. And it was his idea to hire artists only to work with his population. So he had a theater person there, he had a dance person there, he had me there, he had a puppetry artist there, he had an actress, and we all taught. But they also had an art therapy department there. And so that art therapist came in and she worked with the girls with dolls. And she would bring these blank dolls in and she would say, and we had no face on it, we got them from Pearl Paint. And one side of the doll would be where they are now in their life. The other side of the doll is where they came from. And they'd work on these dolls for about 4 months, and I'd peek in the room. These dolls transform these girls. At first, of course, they were talking about the life they led before. So you'd see guns weaved into them, blades, you know, all kinds of their life materials. But then the other side of the doll was a cap and gown, a diploma, you know what I mean? Pretty shoes. It was radical. And they said, we have an idea. And I said, what's that idea? He said, we're going to send dolls to Cambodia to those girls. I said, you are? And so they gave me 20 of their dolls. And I said, oh, this is wonderful. And then I thought, go to Pearl Paint, buy 50 of these dolls, and do the same project in Cambodia with the girls. And so I took these 16 dolls as gifts, and I took 20 dolls, and I went into the safe house with Somali's staff, because I didn't know Somali for 5 years. And I went in there, and there was a big classroom with maybe 50 girls. And I also asked that art therapist to come with me, because I didn't know if I could do this. I didn't know if I could work with little girls that had been violated. I didn't know. And because she had such a calming way, because she was a therapist, I said, Jessica, Would you consider joining me in Cambodia? I can't pay your airfare, but I can pay for your meals and I can pay for your hotel. And she said, Sana, you want me to travel with you? You do it all alone. I said, I don't think I can do this by myself. And so I just remember the first day they walked me into the classroom and he said, talk. He was my interpreter. He talked. And he walked me into the back of the classroom, and I don't really know why he did, but he said to the girl, Son, which means turn around. And they turned around to look at me. And these girls were between the ages of probably 14 and 18, but my mind registered them as babies. And I looked at them, and I shut down. And I went to talk, and I couldn't talk, and I couldn't talk, and I couldn't talk. And I turned to Jessica and said, Jessica, I can't do this. Help me. And she did a beautiful thing. She got in front of me and reached back and held my hands. And I felt her energy. And she would say, hello, my name is Jessica. And she'd lean to the side. This is Sana. And she brought me here to work with you because she loves girls from all around the world. And then I got my breath back. These girls came up to me, started holding each finger. And each finger, I felt energy go through my body. We sat down on the clay floor, and all of us started making dolls and laughing. I didn't know the language, laughing together, them touching my hair, me touching them. Them on the floor in their blue skirts and their white blouses, because that's the uniform. And what happened in those 3 or 4 hours is those girls began to be on my laps. They began leaning all over me. They began breathing on my shoulder that I didn't mind. They didn't care that when their skirts lifted up, that I saw the chain link of where they were once chained to a bed. They didn't care that if they lifted their blouse, if I saw the burn marks where a pimp would put his cigarette out on their body. They didn't care that I saw their cuts on their body. And I realized, they trust me. My skin is not a barrier. My hair is not weird. They trust me. I came there for one time to do that workshop. But when I left that day, I turned to Jessica and said, I'm coming back here for the rest of my life. I want to be a part of their healing process. They healed me, and that's it. And I've never stopped going. And this year was my 17th year, but I lost 2 years of the pandemic. So that's
amazing.
It.
So I want to close with two quick observations, and then we'll open it up for some questions. One, I just want to say, I'm going to start bawling here too, but not everyone, and I would say probably the majority of the people in this room don't feel comfortable as public speakers sharing their stories. You've all heard Sana speak so deeply, confidently, movingly. It's been interesting over the last couple days to see how nervous you get, Sana.
Yes, I know.
About speaking, about presenting. And you're one of the most powerful presenters and speakers that I've ever experienced. And I hope that that carries through with everyone here. So I hope that you can all be inspired by overcoming your own nervousness and to know that people who are powerful human beings still have that nervousness. And the last thing that I'll say is that in Sana's artist bio, one of the frequent things that she wraps her bio with is that she's an artist who wants to walk through the world or experience the world heart first. And I've heard variations of that kind of my whole career, but Sana, I think it's such a beautiful, all-encompassing thing for you and a powerful thing for you, and I love putting it into the bios that the Everson uses, because you truly do structure your whole career and your life to walk through the world heart first. So thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you for listening to Studio Potter, the podcast.